Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
This clip is an exclusive part of the Fans Dog Week, presented by Hooters and Truist Bank.
Let's talk to a guy that's been around Nick Saban, including this past week, if I'm not mistaken. Marty McGee joining us. I'm sorry. Marty Smith, not McGee, his partner. Marty Smith joining us now on the Hobson and Hobson Newsmaker line. Marty, always good to speak with you. Thanks for coming on. And, well, first and foremost, let's ask you your reaction to Brian Kelly and the Southern accent that he apparently used the other night in Baton Rouge.
Well, if you guys know, first of all, good afternoon. Merry Christmas, everybody. If you know anything about the Marty McGee program, you know that we fake our accents, too. According to the Twitter machine, so I think he did a pretty damn good job.
Now, I'm going to tell you, this is us. I'm from New York. He's from Cleveland. There are moments where it gets exaggerated. You guys do admit on the Marty and Marty show that there are times that playing up to who you really are is not as offensive as somebody playing up to what they're really not.
That's another thing that intrigues me is that people also feel like it morphs into some. Like that it gets thicker or not as thick based on who we're talking to or what we're talking about. That just always cracks me up. Anybody that thinks that mine's not real, they ain't never been to Appalachia. I can promise you that. I can't win. I got people in the South saying it's fake, and I got my buddies back home saying that I turned all city on them and that I now I've lost my accent. So either way, when I watched the video, it was funny to me, man, like that I saw it. I guess one of my producers sent it to me, and they were like, look at this. And I couldn't, like, make it out as much, I guess, as some other people did. But, look, man, hey, if you know how to play to your crowd, if you know how to get the people riled up and get them in your corner, do your thing, bro.
Marty Smith is with us on the Hobson and Hobson Newsmaker line.
So the bigger question is your thoughts on this. I guess it's still a carousel. I guess that word is nobody's come up with something better yet about all the changes in college football when it comes to head coaches.
Seismic. The way that these guys have moved around, a month ago, if you would have, if we were prognosticating and, you guys said to me, well, what about Lincoln Riley going to USC, and you might go, I could see maybe. Well, what about Brian Kelly leaving Notre Dame and going to LSU? Like, there's no chance. So, I mean, it really is. It's seismic, and I feel like the Brian Kelly thing was so fast. I feel like it was kind of floated, it was speculated, it was reported, and then it was done. And it really was something.
Marty?
If you would have asked me to bet 48 hours before it was completed and announced, I would have lost the bet.
Did you hear Jack Swarbrick, though, who more than intimated that he thought this something was going on for a number of weeks at a minimum?
Yeah, I did hear him. He would know. He's with Brian Kelly a lot. I don't know about you guys. Were you guys surprised by it? I will.
Yes.
I will. I don't get shocked anymore.
I mean, Marty, the day before, we talked about there not really being a plan B for LSU. Well, lo and behold, never mind plan B. I mean, this thing, it shocked everyone.
It did. And I agree with you. I was actually of the same mind. I kind of felt like Scott Woodward had missed a window with some of the hires that were happening. Not only some of the hires, but some of the re-signings or extensions for folks like Mel Tucker. James Franklin, all those guys, they chose to stay put where they were, make a whole lot more money. And as a result, you start looking at what we believed to be available candidates, and you think, okay, this window's closing on him, and he's all we've all talked about for months now is that he's the king of home run, colossal hires. And you think, well, that door's closing on him. I don't see any windows. And then, boom, the next thing you know, I'm wrong. And look, I think it's a great hire. I've been around Brian Kelly a lot over the last few years. I've covered Notre Dame extensively in the college football playoff. I did sideline reporting last year during the COVID season because we didn't do a whole lot of studio programming at ESPN on the road. And I had a couple of Notre Dame's games last year, so I got to be in those coaches' meetings with him. And, guys, I learned so much from him. And one of the coolest things about it that I learned was, you know, we all remember red-faced, angry, pissed off Brian Kelly. That guy, matured and grew and evolved and changed, and I wondered why. This was at the college football playoff a couple of years ago, and I was sitting across from him in his office, and I was like, what happened? What changed? And it was the realization that if you're going to spend as much time at work, at the football facility, with those young men and your staff as you have to be elite at the collegiate level as a head football coach, you should enjoy it more. And not only that, you should embrace your players more and invest in their lives more. And when he did that, there was the realization that, okay, this is a wonderful opportunity. Let's make sure that it becomes process over outcome every single day, and then the outcome will take care of itself. And it was a really revelatory time for him when that happened. And that's why I say all of that to say I think he'll do well at LSU. Look, I mean, the expectations are national championships. The last three head coaches there have won them. And the one that just won one less than 2 years ago is now gone. So it's obvious that the expectations are very high.
Marty, but I
do like how he operates, guys.
Before we talk about the game itself, three quick things. Are you okay with, and again, whether the video was supposed to get out or the audio was supposed to get out of Brian Kelly addressing his Notre Dame team? I'm not a big fan of that. I don't like gotcha. But that version of what he did, I think it was so he could put his head on a pillow. I think he would have been better off not doing that version, or at least how it sounded or turned out from what I heard. Fair or unfair?
Can you expound upon what you mean? You mean the text and then the meeting in the morning and then
the
leaving?
The meeting in the morning. I think he did that for himself, and I'm sort of not really cool with – and, again, I didn't hear all 10 minutes. I heard enough of it to say, well, he might have been better off just not doing that.
You know, I don't know if you guys saw the Tommy Reese video where Tommy got – he got emotional about his positioning at – the University of Notre Dame. And I think everybody, when you hear Marcus Freeman, when you hear the players endorse Marcus Freeman the way they did, it was amazing to me, like how it went from kind of bewilderment in the program that this occurred all the way to, look, the guys that we have here are the guys that we want here. Right? That was the message that was very obvious to me. The people in this building want to be in this building, and we're going to forge ahead with the people in this building. I don't know if you guys heard. Did you guys hear the podcast that Kyle Hamilton and those guys did? I thought it was so
mature,
so revealing.
Yeah, mature.
It was really revealing to me, and that how bewildered they were, and they were shocked. But they, look, their appreciation for Coach Kelly and the way that they spoke of him was very revelatory to me too. Now, they were also in that moment of still processing it, right? Like, it was brand new when they decided to tape that podcast at, 10 or 11 at night. Mm-hmm. And so, I think that Marcus will do really well there. He's a really bright guy and, young and vibrant and a good recruiter. So, it's just that I don't get shocked much, guys, but this is pretty close.
All right, I just thought it was a misstep by Kelly to go back if that's the messaging he was going to give. And I do agree the rally around behind Freeman and Tommy Reese getting that room to where it was, the pitch that it absolutely sounded and felt like it was coming through the screen was huge. How much should Nick Saban be paid? I'm not asking you to look in everybody's pockets, but when we look at these extensions, Nick Saban's the most underpaid man in sports.
Well, he is, and there's a lot of reasons for that, guys. He has completely – his success and sustained success has completely rewritten how all of this works. And not only has it rewritten, expectations of coaches and rewritten the expectations of the explosion of programs and the financial boom that comes with that, he's also changed his entire university. If you look at the University of Alabama's enrollment – before Saban's arrival, and you look at it now, it's
twice. And not only that, 80% of that enrollment expansion is out-of-state tuition, which is an overwhelming financial boon to the university. So we can, like, look, man, you're not – I've been around that guy a lot. The way that he operates floors me every time. Anytime I sit across from him, I learn. And, look, how much is he worth? I mean, he's worth – I think he makes, like, 10 now, 9.5, 10 now. That's a, like, that's nothing. I mean, if some of these guys who've, you know, not won national championships or not won conference championships are making $9 million, coach should make 20. I mean, look, he's the greatest of all time. He's won 7 national championships. So, look, I mean, I just don't – you just name your number.
Okay.
Name your number.
I asked Nick yesterday, do you think Kirby Smart has a new deal before the end of this college football playoff season? Do we hear an announcement of a Kirby Smart deal?
Boys, I told you, not much surprises me anymore. Kirby's done an amazing job, you know, taking a Coach Saban philosophy, implementing it at Georgia, recruiting at the absolute highest level, developing players at the highest level, and going undefeated in the regular season all the way through the Southeastern Conference, and here they are at the championship weekend. And, you know, there's but one hurdle left, and they get to see it tomorrow. I don't know why they wouldn't.
Marty Smith is with us on the Hobson and Hobson Newsmaker line. So you talk about being around Nick Saban over the years, and we talked about his reaction at the end of the Auburn victory. It was very un-Saban-like. He was very happy, relieved. What's the biggest change
proud.
That you've... Yeah, what's
proud.
The biggest change that you've noticed in him, if anything at all, over the years?
That he's trying. I'm not saying that he's always succeeding in it, but he's trying with a conscious effort to be where his feet are. He's trying with a conscious effort to actually process and enjoy big moments like that, like winning the SEC championship last year over the Florida Gators and being damn near in tears, which, of course, as you guys remember, prompted Najee Harris to say, whoa, he does have a heart. And, like, I sat across from him Wednesday afternoon, 2 days ago, in Tuscaloosa, and I asked him this question. I said, Coach, I've covered you for a while now. I've covered huge moments for you. I've covered crushing moments for you. But I don't often see that level of joy in you. I don't see that level of that infusion of joy. I said, why? What was it about winning that Iron Bowl that made you react that way? And he said, man, it was looking at the players. He said, my players don't have to win games like that very often. That just doesn't happen where we come back that way. And look, you guys know it, man. Jordan-Hare Stadium can be a hornet's nest, especially for Alabama. And they were on the proverbial ropes. And those young men figured out a way. And Bryce Young had first down and 97 yards for the rest of his life, and he delivered. And to see the way that the players reacted, Coach Saban, as a human being, couldn't help but react that way. Because he knew everything that went into it, and he knew how much that game meant to those guys. I thought it was really cool to see him react like that. And I shout out Jamie Erdahl, too. I thought she did a really, really spectacular job after that game.
Well, I thought even at halftime, what's the problem?
Yeah, that was really good.
Yeah. So you know Saban, and I think we've all seen a bunch of bad B movies where we talk about the fire and brimstone all week. You know, I'll run through a wall. How much do you think the coaching staff, Nick in particular, are talking about being an underdog for only the sixth time, it seems, in 13 or 14 years? They know it. Nobody's going to deny that they know it. Or do you think that's a player amongst player thing more than it is messaging from higher?
Knowing him, I would say yes, but that doesn't mean I'm right, guys. I'm not in the locker room every day, like with whatever his messaging is to those guys on a daily, habitual basis. What I do know is one thing I know that he does habitually harp is be better on the next play. That should be your only focus. It shouldn't matter what the scoreboard says. It shouldn't matter what the implications of the outcome are. It should be about, I need to beat my guy on the next play. And my Lord, is that the most coach speak thing ever. But that's what the process is. And that's why he has what he has and has accomplished what he's accomplished. If they're worried about the scoreboard in that hornet's nest in Jordan-Hare rather than winning the next play, they don't win that game, right? So that's just truth. I don't know to what degree they use it as motivation, but I do know, because I asked them this week, you know, what that says about the national respect for the program, that they've been favored for 92 consecutive games. And it really is this unbelievable respect for what they've built and what they've sustained. It's remarkable, guys, with the coaching turnover that he has had. You know, you got guys like Dabo Swinney who have maintained, other than Jeff Scott going to South Florida as the head coach, the same group of men for 12 or whatever years. Great continuity. And Coach Saban has a different group of coordinators every year. So it's really remarkable.
Whatever barometer you use, Georgia's defense compared to every other college defense you've seen, is it still an incomplete because we're not done? Or what's your statement about them
today? It's generational. They have pros at every level. And, again, like, you know, I'm not sitting here trying to be Johnny Cool. It just means I'm on too many airplanes. I've been in Athens a lot this year, too. And the quality of those young men on that defense, I got a feature running tomorrow on all the shows on Jordan Davis. What a great young man and just a complete unit. I mean, I stood, guys, I'm 6'1", 170. I looked like a Smurf compared to that guy. And N'Kobe Dean, what a tremendous young man. They just have so much talent at every level. And they're so well coached and they're extremely disciplined. And they really have owned this no-name thing. We want to be great. I want to be great so that we can be great. And that just oozes out of that program. And, yeah, they're generational, man. They're great.
So, Nick Saban, you talk about being on the ropes at Jordan-Hare. Obviously, a lot of people, when you look at this game, have him on the ropes again. Mm-hmm. How do they surprise a lot of people and win this SEC championship?
Well, it's going to be interesting to see if they can run the football. Is Brian Robinson healthy enough to do that? I think this game comes down to, can Alabama's offensive line perform at a level that allows them to stay on the field? Because if you look at what's really made Alabama's – hey, Big Dog. If you look at what Alabama's offense has struggled with this year, it's really physical defensive fronts like Texas A&M, like Auburn, even like LSU. And so there is no more physical front seven in college football than Georgia's. So can they sustain drives and stay on the field, run the football, and take shots when they can? Because they can take shots. I mean, Jameson Williams is a dude now. And Bryce Young is a dude, and he's so cerebral and so talented at figuring out what they're trying to do. And so they confuse him. Look, it's going to be a hell of a challenge. They're the best team. Georgia's the best team in the country with the best defense in the country, and like I said, pros everywhere.
It's really easy to say that. Look, I expect a close game. I think some Georgia fans think it could be a bigger Georgia win than I think all three of us, it sounds like, really believe it will be. How much do you think Saturday night we're talking about he went for it on 3rd-and-3, either guy? They faked this. They did something that was not trickery, but a coaching decision or two. Do you think on Saturday night we're playing that type of game physically on the field and then later on talking about it, that there's a moment that comes from the sidelines that might have been, quote-unquote, the swing moment?
I mean, certainly it's plausible. This is one of those things that it's going to be extremely physical, this game. So, yeah, it may come down to something like that. Does Saban take a chance trying to, a fake field goal or a fake punt or something like that, or maybe a special teams play by somebody that runs one back? Maybe it's a kickoff return for touchdown. They're both capable for sure. So, I don't know, man. Certainly it's plausible. I don't know.
All right, Marty, listen, we always appreciate the time. Going back to what we said at the beginning, I think that we talked about this earlier. Chris is from New Jersey. I'm from the Midwest in Ohio. I think when you get around your friends back home, you kind of go back to that accent without even realizing it. But I also know what you said as well, because when I go back to where I was born, my friends tell me, what's going on? You got an accent. I said, what? You don't have one? It's amazing how people don't realize that they have an accent sometimes themselves.
It is, man. It just cracks me up. I always find it to be hilarious. It just, you know, I don't know about you guys, but I've always been told that a Southern accent is not the greatest of assets in terms of trying to become a broadcast journalist. So
if you think I'm faking this, I don't know. You know, I have college students addressing me all the time, running up to me on these campuses. Marty, my professor says I have to lose my accent or I'll never get a job on TV. And I was like, well, tell him to call me. I mean,
I'll say this. What you did with that kid who was struggling through his stand-up that he was taping, you didn't know that that was all being recorded. That's about as genuine as it gets. So I'll say that about you, Marty Smith. Anybody that wants to question you being genuine, just watch that piece of tape.
Hey, Marty, we've also never asked you this, I don't think. The 20-year-old version of you, when you talk about you're living in, let's be honest, we all sort of live in our own bubble. Some bubbles are just a little bit bigger. If I would have told the 20-year-old version of you that you were literally going to see the world, I don't know how you're going to see the world, but you're going to see the world. You're going to get to meet people, CEOs. You're going to... powerful people. You're going to be around in those types of rooms.
As you said, you're going to be on a lot of airplanes.
You're also going to be at tailgates because that's also part of who you are. What would the 20-year-old version of you said?
Well, the 20-year-old version of me had been in three or four states total. So the world just seemed so unattainable at that time. I was always a real fantastic dreamer. Like, I was fearless in the concept of it, but I never really... Look, man, I try to live my life in a way that is that I am so overwhelmed with gratitude, and that everything I do, kindness is my compass. I want it to be about kindness, effort, and passion, because when I wake up every day, I don't control a whole lot of this, but I control how nice I am to other people. I control if I'm willing to give every last ounce of everything I got to whatever my challenge is that day. And it's my decision if I have an undeniable positive energy. That's on me. Those are mine. And I've taken that approach since I'll never forget getting hired by NASCAR when I was 22 years old, and the first place they sent me was Sonoma, California. They may as well have sent me to Mars or Pluto or Neptune. Like, I couldn't even rent a car. Like, I didn't know what I was doing. And here I am getting ready to cover the SEC championship game again. I do try very hard, guys, to pause. And as I was saying about Coach Saban, be where my feet are sometimes, a lot of times, because you can get caught up in the next airplane, the next airport. Oh, my God, I'm overwhelmed with anxiety because what if I'm late for this right now? This traffic is going to end me, all that stuff. But what an overwhelmingly blessed life. My wife is amazing. My kids are healthy. I have the coolest job. I got great friends. I'm just a very blessed man, and I try to live my life with light that demands other people see it.
Well, it's a great attitude to have, and it's worked out for you. Marty Smith, always a pleasure having you on. Enjoy the weekend. We'll talk soon.
Appreciate y'all having me, fellas. Enjoy the game. Merry Christmas,
Thank you, Marty.
Everybody.
You as well.
Merry
Thanks.
Christmas to you as well. Marty Smith with us on the Hobson & Hobson Newsmaker Line.
Spring is here, and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Hey, sandwich lovers. Today's your lucky day. There's a whole new way to roll for lunch or dinner delight with Nucky's Hoagies in the Roswell Corners Shopping Center. Now open. Nucky's Hoagies in Roswell is family-owned and operated by the sub-sisters, Stacy and Shannon, whose love language is food and Nucky's Hoagies, their passion. When you bite into a Nucky's Hoagie, you'll taste the difference. The softest hoagie rolls ever, along with hunger-quenching sandwich combinations. Make Nucky's Hoagies in Roswell on Woodstock Road your new favorite spot for lunch or dinner.